Welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday, the actuality news show, offering unique insights and in-depth analysis featuring South Africa's top business leaders, newsmakers, and analysts for today's professionals. Your host, Jeremy Metz.
Hello and welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday. I'm Jeremy Maggs with 30 minutes on South African and global news. We are live and then up as a podcast. Interviews with key business and political figures, prominent newsmakers and leading experts, all in a concise and informative update. It's Friday, the 14th of June. Coming up on the program, a new political dawn for South Africa. We'll look at process, pitfalls and procedure, and also ask the question, in the absence of a unifying Mandela figure, are we in trouble? Concern over the economy and consumer indebtedness as a new government takes shape. Johannesburg's ongoing water crisis as calls are now made to residents to start storing, and 50 years of the National Arts Festival. A turning point politically in South Africa's history today as we see a new government sworn in after 30 years of ANC rule. Here is the Chief Justice at the start of proceedings.
I congratulate each and every one of the members who will be sworn in today and want to stress the importance of the position that members of the National Assembly occupy. They make laws for our country and in that way shape the future of our democracy. Therefore, as you take the oath or make the affirmation that you will make today, do recall the huge responsibility that the people of South Africa have placed on your shoulders and the honor that you have been given and privilege to be part of this very important body in our country. Let me also announce that in accordance with the Constitution, Item 9 of Schedule 3, I have made the rules that govern the sitting today.
The Chief Justice Raymond Zondo with us now on the program, someone who has guided us through the intricacies of this process over the past couple of weeks. Once again, Dr. T.K. Puer, Public Policy Specialist from the Wits School of Governance. T.K., in your opinion then, and welcome, this new dispensation, the GNU, is it going to work effectively given the diverse political interests involved? What do you think the key factors are that will determine success or failure?
Yeah, afternoon. Thanks for having me. Well, I think this grand coalition, as I prefer to call it, the key thing, what success for many South Africans will just rest on three key areas. And some of them, I think, might take longer than however long they might last. Let's say more than 5 years, which is, can we see bottlenecks such as unemployment legislation or trying to create employment? Can that become the focus? Can government be seen to be addressing, I think, things that have been highlighted long ago? On issues of energy, on railways, can those things be unblocked? And I think in the short term, and this is something that they'll have to take more seriously and might create more contestation within this grand coalition, is can we finally see politicians being held accountable for I think, said issues of corruption? I think that it's very important for citizens. Citizens want to see this really happen because for the longest of time, having one dominant party has meant that they could always sweep things under the floor. And I think if they could probably address this, for many citizens, it would look like success. And then longer term, we will have to be addressing the problems of the economy. And as I said, those are not things you can do in 3 years. And that one, I think citizens, they don't like it, but they can accept it. But in the short term, it does need to look as though the issues of corruption is being taken seriously.
Where do you see the early fault lines in this new arrangement in terms of cooperation and procedure?
It'll be on, I think, two key issues. One is the makeup of the executive and chairpersons of committees. If the same individuals who have been flagged in many reports come back in any capacity at all, it will really look like as though, especially for a party like the DA and the IFP, it will look as though they're just getting along to go along with the ANC. That will be quite problematic, even for their constituencies. So that's the first thing. And then it's the issue of, look, when we speak about corruption, the reason I think it is going to be big is that there are many individuals who've been flagged. We've long had this issue. And how will the ANC respond to that? Because at the end of the day, they are still the majority. And it'll be interesting to see internally, how does the ANC internalize being a, you know, being a player like everybody else? Yes, with a few more players on the field. And I think that probably is going to be the biggest thing. Issues of the economy, if you look at all three manifestos of the IFP, the DA, and the ANC, no one disagrees that we've got a problem with the economy. It's just the minutia of the methodology of how we address it. And I think on there, we should expect contestation, but I think there might be a quick move so that they can almost seem like they're winning, like they're working.
On the other side of the room, there is the Economic Freedom Fighters, the PAC, the UDM, Al-Jamaa, the UAT, and the ATM announcing today that they've formed something called a Progressive Caucus. They are not going to be quiet, are they?
No, they're not going to be quiet, but I think it was to be expected. Look, I think more interestingly from the opposition, and I think it's maybe something we probably will need guidance from, if I'm not mistaken, there still needs to be a question of if now the DA and the IFP have joined government, they would need to move benches. Therefore, following South African tradition, isn't then the official opposition now the MK party as the largest of the grouping after the DA? Yeah. And I think that will probably create its own issues going forward. And in terms of, yes, the EFF might be the stronger of this new entity, but it's not really the official opposition. Mm. That's the position of the MK, and they cannot be ignored in this.
And the MK, of course, notably absent today.
Yes, I think it's a good way to just really show that if you're going to cancel, make sure that you do speak to the person who's booking your ticket. Look, I think they could present a problem, and I think that there does probably need to be discussion to say, listen, look, they have not got what they want, but at the end of the day, this is politics. You don't always get what you want. But there is always a warning to people who are seen to be victorious that you sometimes do need to offer the vanquished some olive branch. And in this case, I don't know, you ask the question, do we need a new unifying figure? In the old times, we used to have a person called President Nelson Mandela, and he used to time it quite well. We don't have that at the moment. And I think we do kind of need a figure who's going to probably reach out to the MK, not to appease them, but to, you need to give your vanquished enemy something to hold on to so that they don't become fully disruptive.
And that figure, of course, is still to emerge.
It's not going to be emerged. I think one of the realities which we, in this new second republic, because I think France has had five republics, I'd argue that we're in the second republic of South Africa. We need to get used to the fact that we're going to have not great leaders, but we might just need to have normal managers and people who can just do sound things. Because I think the era of just looking for a former President Mandela and Mbeki, or even an FW to take in that frame, it's gone. We have very normal individuals who are very faulty, and what we can just simply need to hold them to account is, can you just manage the country properly? Because I think there's enough ingenuity within the country, within the economy and among citizens, that we can kind of do the job. We just need you not to mess up.
Just give us a couple of technocrats. Dr. TK Poor, thank you very much indeed. Public policy specialist from the Wits School of Governance.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at midday.
So, on this political turning point day, Vern Harris, the acting chief executive of the Nelson Mandela Foundation, writes that he feels profoundly ambivalent about continuing deliberations and negotiations around the formation of this new government, whether it's a grand coalition, as TK Poor was saying, or a government of national unity. Vern Harris joins us now. And firstly, Vern, can you elaborate for me then on what specific aspects are making you feel this way, this feeling, as you say, of ambivalence?
I think, Jeremy, it has to do with the sense that in the short term, one is confident that under President Ramaphosa's leadership, a coalition or a government of national unity will be pulled together. I think the concern is the longer term, is the capacity of that administration to deliver on, you know, promises being made and on the expectations that all of us have now.
Do you think that we have, or this new entity is going to have, the maturity to compromise, which is critical, it's germane to the importance of any coalition, whether it's here or anywhere in the world?
Well, I think that there are good signs. I mean, I think The governing party for 30 years has been humbled, and I'm hearing a different tone of voice, which is an indicator, I think, of at least the potential, you know, for that kind of pragmatism, that kind of politics of pragmatism as opposed to a politics of point scoring. And I'm hearing similar tones from other political formations as well. So there's promise, at least.
Do you think the political tone in South Africa, Vern, over the past couple of years has become too loud, has become too abrasive and strident?
It's become brutal. I would use that word instead. Yes. We have to shift that. And, you know, one remembers the mid-90s with affection. In that space, I think we found a different tone and a different discourse altogether. We've lost it now.
So do you think it is recoverable, and in the short term, with this huge weight of responsibility that the key political players have, what do they need to do in that respect? Maybe just to mollify the country initially and then start us moving in a different direction?
Yeah, look, I have to believe that they can pull it together and do something really special. I mean, the conditions back in 1994, especially where I was in KwaZulu-Natal, were extremely fraught. And yet we made it work. So I think we have to say it can work. But it will take, I think, something special in terms of clarity of personnel. I think we want to see whoever is in that coalition or government of national unity absolutely clear on what the national project is now. We had that clarity back in 1994. For me, the project now is about turning the constitution into a lived reality for the great majority of our people. If you know, all the parties are pressing for that, then I think, you know, it can work.
Vern, the early and mid-90s are such a long time ago. You talk about KwaZulu-Natal and your experience there and making it work. Maybe just reflect for me a little further on your experience there, not necessarily on how you made it work, but how you dealt with challenge and conflict at that time. And I'm sure, in spite of all the optimism and enthusiasm, there was an underlying feeling of mistrust and anxiety.
It's a great question, Jeremy. And I, thinking back, and obviously it's, as you say, it's a long time ago, I'm hoping that my memory is accurate. But, you know, traveling from Durban to Pietermaritzburg to Ulundi, constantly mindful of how easily we could slide back into the mayhem of that civil war in KwaZulu-Natal, I think there was a combination of fear, a healthy fear. We were afraid that if we didn't pull together and make this work, we would go back into this bloodbath. And that was a positive energy, ironically. But then the other part of it was, there was, in my experience anyway, a vested interest in demonstrating that that province could work. So whether you're talking about the IFP at the time or whether you're talking about the remnants of the old white apartheid bureaucracy or indeed the ANC, and again, I want to say Jacob Zuma played a very constructive role in those few years. So vested interest in making it work.
You also write, Vern Harris, about the importance of restoring a sense of national purpose. Do you think our national purpose has changed?
I think the national purpose has changed, Jeremy. The top priority back in the mid-90s was to make democracy stick. I think where we've landed now is a place of stuckness, is that democracy is not working for the majority of our people, even though democracy has stuck. So we have to reimagine democracy, and we have to revisit difficult things like you know, the redistribution of wealth, land reform, all of these tricky ones that we've been kicking down the road for too long now. That's the challenge moving forward.
And just a quick answer, do you think that we are at a significant disadvantage because of the absence of a unifying figure like Nelson Mandela?
Quick answer, yes. Madiba gave us something special, but In my experience at the time, there was good leadership at many levels. And I remember being, you know, in a national government department where the minister was IFP, the DG was ANC, and then we had a mix at different levels. But I saw all of them stepping up and showing that leadership that is required in moments like this. And so, you know, there is no savior figure for us now. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe, we, you know, in our history, been too dependent on that savior figure. And we've got to find a different model for leadership now moving forward.
Vern Harris, Acting Chief Executive of the Nelson Mandela Foundation. Thank you.
MoneyWeb at midday for all your up-to-date stories.
So on this Friday, the first sitting of the National Assembly, and it's fair to say that the South African economy is facing a fair degree of uncertainty. Ahead of this event, the Rand seeing some modest gain against the dollar, but the JSE remains cautious. I want to talk now to Samantha Moyana, who's a debt counsellor and joins me on the program. And I want to try and focus this on the individual and that uncertainty that I have referenced. So how do you think this is going to affect investor confidence and the business environment and investment in the very short term?
Yes, the South African economy faces uncertainty after the ANC's proposal for a government of national unity following its first loss of the majority vote since 1994. So this has actually sent out a mixed signal to economy, impacting both the stock market and investors' confidence. So with this being said, the government of national unity has both positive and negative impact on the economy and investors' confidence. Like unified government can create jobs by encouraging economic growth, reducing poverty, and address inequality. They can also increase investors' confidence by demonstrating a commitment to good governance and economic growth. And also with that being said, they can also increase investors' confidence by combating corruption.
On the negative side, though, there's also the concern that it might have an impact on inflation that would affect ordinary South Africans, and the price that we pay for things, it would have a negative impact on our daily life. Again, from your perspective and the world within which you work, what advice would you give?
Yes, definitely. Inflation will hit a lot of people, meaning that when the cost of living is high, it reduces the purchasing power for consumers, meaning that that's when a lot of people are actually going to resort to applying for more credit, and then they'll find themselves swamped in debt and seeking for debt counseling or needing a financial advisor. So this is going to definitely affect a lot of people should the inflation actually rise. I would also like that maybe they need to consider all of that, because a lot of people is going to be badly affected financially.
So when you talk about people being badly affected, this would be right across the financial spectrum. So when you talk to people who are in need of debt counseling, what are their principal concerns? Samantha, what are they saying to you?
You would find people coming under debt review because obviously they have so many debt or financial commitments, they can no longer manage their finances. They actually literally have nothing left to see to their standard of living or sustaining their daily lives. So that's why we see a lot of people resorting into applying for debt review. And you would actually see when you look at their affordability that this person is actually been living off their credit card or actually an overdraft. And this is quite concerning, you know, when someone now your salary is no longer suffice to sustain you in your financial needs.
So if we are looking at an era of potential economic instability, I guess people have also got to be prepared for potential unemployment. And in that respect, I guess you need to start thinking of something like an emergency fund.
Definitely. It is very important for people to build an emergency fund. Yes, I understand people say we have so many financial commitments that there's nothing left, but start as little as 200 Rand. Yes, it may not be much, but that can actually assist you, because so many people find themselves applying for a quick payday loan because they don't have emergency funds. So if you'd find yourself saving and building that emergency fund, should any unforeseen reason or circumstances arise, otherwise you can be able to access those funds to cover for whichever reason that you're actually faced with. So it is very important for people to teach themselves that it may not be easy, but it comes with you having to be committed with yourself. It comes with self-discipline financially. So start as little as 200 Rand or whichever amount that you have, or cut down on unnecessary expenses, because sometimes we tend to want to live a luxury life. You can cut down maybe on buying takeaways, buy maybe only takeaways on weekends instead of Monday to Friday. Save that money that you were spending, build an emergency fund from that. Starting as little as cutting down from your current budget.
And at a time like this, as risky as it seems, it's not a bad idea to start looking at alternative income sources, whether it's starting a small business, whether it's part-time work. That, I guess, though, does come with its own inherent risk.
Yes, definitely. Looking into freelancing, part-time work, or start a small business to diversify income streams. If you know that you have a certain skill in maybe cooking, you can start maybe a small business, make food or sell goods. You know, it doesn't have to be like a big business. There's a lot of vendors out there trying to, you know, make money for daily living. So if you also have that skill, or maybe you can be able to get a part-time job or manage two jobs at once, why not? Because we're actually heading to that point in life whereby the current income that you're getting from one employer will not be able to sustain you long enough.
Well, that is some good advice. Samantha Muyana, thank you very much for talking to me today on MoneyWeb at Midday.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
Now, we're told that Gauteng's water supply is under increasing pressure due to poor rainfall and infrastructure problems. Rand Water has now made calls for people to store water. More now from Makanosi Mahu, who is the spokesperson for Rand Water. Makanosi, welcome. Thank you very much indeed for joining me. Why have you deemed fit then to issue this warning?
Good afternoon, Jeremy. The warning was issued by City of Johannesburg for people to store water. In fact, on the contrary, we don't encourage people to store water. Because remember now, if we all storing water, the reservoirs are going to run empty. That's where we're coming from. But with regards to the proactive maintenance projects that we are undertaking, we're starting on the 22nd of June up until the 29th of July. But however, we want to emphasize that not all areas will not have water for the duration of the maintenance.
Let's talk about the maintenance in just a moment, but I am interested. You're on the one hand saying that storage is a bad idea. The City of Johannesburg, which effectively is your largest client, is saying we have to store water. Who do we believe here, and why are you at odds with the utility?
We're not at odds. All for us, it's more of an advice that we're giving. Joburg Water would know their preparedness in terms of these maintenance. How prepared are they in terms of giving people water should there be a challenge? So if they are encouraging people to store water, maybe they should indicate how much water should people store, because our argument as Rand Water is if we all store water, then there will be a big problem.
It's fair to ask you the question as to who we should believe.
No, it is fair. It is fair. Look, if your municipality or Joburg Water is your service provider, they are giving you water directly. If they will be able to cope with reservoirs if they are going to be running empty, look, I would say listen to your municipality. But from a bulk water point of view, we are concerned with the advice.
All right. How crucial is this maintenance project, and how long is it going to take?
It's crucial, Jeremy, because we want we want to preserve the quality and integrity of our infrastructure and assets. So we are choosing to have this maintenance during winter months, that we know that the demand is quite low, in preparation for summer and for spring and summer. So it's very important that we do this maintenance. So we are changing valves, we're changing a meter there, we're looking at if there are any leaks. So basically that's what we're doing.
And what are you expecting to find in this respect? I guess the subtext to that question is how bad a problem is it?
The problem is not bad. It's more of a proactive maintenance. I mean, Rainwater is an old company. I mean, we've been been around 420 years. So from time to time, we need to change parts. Like when you take your car for service, we need to take parts. We need to change meters. We need to change valves. So that's what we're doing. It's maintenance.
How long is the process going to take, and what will the end result be once this maintenance is complete?
We will be able to supply water, and we're hoping that it will be uninterrupted because the assets will be maintained, will be looked after. Sorry, there's a call coming in. It's actually disturbing me, but let's go on. We're actually saying we are preserving the lifespan of our infrastructure, so we'll be able to supply water for longer. The period of the maintenance is 37 days, but as I was saying, not everybody would be impacted over that period.
All right. I think it also is incumbent upon us next week then to reach out to Johannesburg Water to see what their perspective is. Magnosi Marhu, thank you very much indeed for joining me on the program today.
MoneyWeb at midday for all your up-to-date stories.
And as we approach the long weekend, let's finish with this story. Always in crisp and cold conditions, the National Arts Festival in Grahamstown, now Makanda, is really something to look forward to. Anywhere in the frontier town is a place for a stage or some form of pop-up activity. The event, would you believe, turns 50 this year. So I want to spend just a little time reflecting on its success and impact with Monica Newton, the Chief Executive Officer of the National Arts Festival. Monica, welcome. And why and how has this event endured?
Well, I think the festival has been a benchmark, a mirror, a touch point that artists across many generations and across many travails and challenges have found to be a place where they could come and present their work. And the festival has evolved over many years to be that place, no matter what your story is, no matter what language you speak, no matter where you come from, no matter what you're presenting in terms of your medium or discipline, the festival welcomes you. And if we can be that place for the next 50 years, I'm good with that.
Monica, during apartheid, it's fair to say that the festival provided an important platform for protest, as well as, I guess, the promotion of black artists. Do you think that role has evolved in a post-apartheid South Africa?
I think it has evolved because obviously, you know, things like freedom of speech, the freedom of association, freedom to marry and to love and to be integrated, those things have changed a lot. Post 94, but also before then, because there was obviously critical apartheid era legislation that started to de-enact it, or whatever the original phrasing should be, as we sort of evolved into a more modern society. But fundamentally, what we see now, though, is still the continued need for the arts to talk, for there to be conversations, for the anguish and anger and hopes of a generation to be expressed in a way that is true to themselves and to be understood by audiences, policymakers, and others, to create places where different voices can be heard, minority voices who might not occupy space and place elsewhere. And critically also to be an engine of growth and change and innovation and development. So I think things have changed, but the role of festivals in the ecosystem of the arts has become more and more important. Funding crunches are very real. Paucity of community spaces, the difficulty of presenting work on national stages continues. And festivals are that place where we aggregate value to such an extent that we can present hundreds of works at a single moment in time, because that's the most efficient way for us to do it. So it's a really interesting space to be in economically and socially, but I would like to believe that we continue to be a place that represents the struggles of everyday South Africans and artists, regardless of the fact that we're now in a democratic dispensation.
Let me pick
it's
you
not
up on
all the let land me, of milk and honey.
Yeah, let me pick you up on one of those points. You talk about the growth of festivals generally, not just in this country, but around the world. That particular space, I guess, has become a lot more competitive. Difficult, I would imagine, to maintain a USP and a leading edge.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen festivals actually evolve from this festival, Car Car and Car, for example. And what we do see, though, is a community of festivals evolving. If you plot the sort of major multidisciplinary arts festivals on a calendar, we present about 9 months worth of work for artists and technicians and, of course, related crafters and vendors and all of the value chains that we keep going with our operations. So it is a community, and we do like to see ourselves as a community, not necessarily in competition with each other. And the more we cooperate, I believe, and other festivals do believe as well, we've been talking a lot since last year about how to work together and to make things more efficient. But certainly that question of leading edge, that question of why does somebody come to Makanda, is something that our team talks about a lot. And Rusera and her artistic committee, in their decisions about curatorial themes, also begin to imagine the National Arts Festival evolving into a place of meaning, certainly, into a place of experimentation, definitely, continuing to offer new voices, but also needing to evolve into a new economic and cultural context where we're not just competing with other live events, we're competing with streaming, we're competing with gaming, we're competing with people's handheld devices. And that's, yeah, we're on our toes all the time.
And just a final one, it's obvious that the festival contributes to the local economy, not just Makanda, but surrounds. Are you able to quantify that economic impact?
We've done studies for a number of different years in collaboration with Professor Jeff Antrobus and Jen Snowball, and now Jen Snowball, Professor of Economics at Rhodes University. So our last study was in 2019, and it indicated that we bring in about 90 million rand directly into the city of Makanda and about 350 into the economy of the Eastern Cape. Part of that is just about scale. You're a big thing that happens in a small space, and our audiences come from all over the country. So you're bringing new money into the spaces. And this year we'll be doing our first post-COVID impact study, which we're very excited by, because the team from Rhodes, Jen Snowball and Professor Zibanda, are working with us on a new methodology that also looks at a lot more artistic value, environmental value that we bring or don't bring. So there will be some interesting, I think, insights that come from that. But there is no question that a festival like the National Arts Festival has an enormous amount of meaning for the city of Makanda. It's part of its brand. It is what makes the place unique. And because we live here and we invest here, we also do a lot in the city. We have about 1,600 people that work with us every month to help clean the streets and fill potholes and help out and just be a corporate citizen here in Makanda in collaboration with the Social Employment Fund. So, yeah, the festival is a very big deal for Makanda, and as well as other small towns that host festivals, such as Oetsuan and others.
Monica Newton is the Chief Executive Officer of the National Arts Festival. Monica, thank you so much. And that's where we are going to leave it for today. MoneyWeb at Midday is live at noon weekdays. We're then up as a podcast. Goodbye to you, and thank you for listening.
Listen to the daily live stream of MoneyWeb at Midday or download episodes on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts and Spotify, or follow MoneyWeb News on social media for more updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.